The history of our summer game has been constantly distinguished by its long and close association with gentlemen of the cloth. How many bucolic country parsons have strapped on their pads, hitched up their hassocks, adjusted their fennels, blankered their baldekins, and strode out onto the cricket field to do battle for their village team? How many rural deacons and suffragan bishops have officiated at the solemnization of marriages and the dedication of new lifeboats while secretly wearing under their robes their free foresters' underpants? The first-class game, too, has been graced by the appearance of clerics, both humble and distinguished. A glance at Wisden will reveal that His Holiness George Pope gave noble service to the county of Derbyshire for many, many years. More recently, that portly and amiable cricketer, David Shepherd, on his retirement from Gloucestershire County Cricket Club, was appointed Bishop of Liverpool. And in my opinion, not before time. My thoughts have strayed in this direction after attending recently a service at the parish church of St. Wilfrid, the Blessed Rhodes. And the padre there is an old friend of mine. His name is the Reverend A.K. Mole Drabley. And it is my custom every year to attend the service designated in the Book of Common Prayer as the third Sunday after the Lord's Test. And the church itself is splendid, built in the early Headingley style with its exquisite reredos made from the remains of the site screens at Bramall Lane, and its magnificent stained glass windows depicting scenes in the life of Emmett Robinson. Mole Drabley, cricket fanatic all his life, took up the living of St. Wilfrid, the Blessed Rhodes, after serving several years as Chaplain General to Sealink. It was while conducting a service on the Maid of Orleans that he achieved episcopal immortality as the only man ever to be seasick while giving Holy Communion to Mr. Wilfrid Wooler. Fortunately for him, Wooler decided not to excommunicate him, a typical act of Christian charity by this near saintly man, whose name is revered the length and breadth of his native Wales, and indeed is the object of cult worship by some of the more primitive peoples of the upper Swansea Valley. It was Mole Drabley's abiding interest in our summer game that was ultimately responsible for his taking over the incumbency of St. Wilfrid, the Blessed Rhodes. The incident occurred during the annual Internation cricket I stood for at Colwyn Bay, when Mole Drabley was acting as umpire in the match Church in Wales Select versus Winford Vaughan Thomas. A chance meeting during the luncheon adjournment with the Archbishop of Canterbury, who at that time was Mr. E.W. Swanton, later to achieve even greater ecclesiastical eminence as chief cricket writer for the Daily Telegraph, was instrumental in Mole Drabley's transference from his maritime ministrations to the quieter backwaters of sacerdotal suburbia. His blessed and overwhelming reverence, E.W. Swanton, was leaving the main pavilion, where he had been viewing an exhibition of Mr. Tony Lewis's letters of application to join the National Union of Journalists, and listening to a recital of early Carmarthenshire King Gannus with Mr. Len Munzer, harp, Mr. Gilbert Parkhouse, Velindra bagpipes, Mr. Don Shepherd, spoons, and Mr. Tony Caudill, mezzo-soprano. He had lunched well. The D-salmon poached in goat's milk and preseli fennel had been outstanding. The wines had made sweet and languid music on his palate, and he'd particularly revelled in a vintage Chateau Solanki and the arrogant, full-bodied elegance of the Niersteiner Guter's Majid Khan. He was in a benign mood. At that very moment, he had at his disposal two livings, both of which were sinecures in their different manners. One was the rectorship of St. Wilfrid, the Blessed Rhodes. The other was editor-in-chief of the Sunday Telegraph. In the full flood of his postprandial beneficence, he decided that he would offer these livings to the first person he saw on leaving the pavilion. Thankfully, he did not notice Miss Dorothy Squires slinking out of the Gareth Edwards portable temperance tea rooms. Instead, his gaze fell upon the minute figure of Mole Drabley, scurrying to the changing room to don his umpire's garb. "You!" he bellowed in the manner with which he customarily addressed recalcitrant junior sub-editors and insubordinate captains of England. Mole Drabley froze in his tracks. Was it God that had spoken to him? Had the creator of heaven and earth and E.R. Dexter and all the goodnesses thereof chosen to address him in that icy wilderness on the North Wales coast? Once more he heard those ringing, celestial tones.
You! Shorthouse!
Scarcely daring to breathe, he turned. He saw an impressive figure with a leonine mane of snow-white hair and an imperious jut to the jaw. Yes, it was God. And he was wearing MCC suspenders. He flung himself on his knees. And there and then he was granted the benefice of St. Wilfrid, the Blessed Rhodes. With what joy he scurried home and flung away the impedimenta of his office as chaplain general to Sealink, the self-writing dog collar, the inflatable font with snorkel attachment, and the bell-bottom cassock. With what ecstasy he strode down the gravel driveway of the vicarage of St. Wilfrid the Blessed Rhodes, with its rambling roses, its Leylandii Wilsonia, and its Erica Sutcliffia. And there, for the past 10 years, he has ministered to his flocks with gentleness and humility. With what tender nostalgia he recounts the highlights of that past decade. His part in the ordination into the BBC of the Reverend F.S. Truman, his influence on the conversion of St. Raymond Dillingworth from his Leicester heresy, and his sympathetic intervention during the distressing circumstances surrounding the defrocking of Canon Close. To my mind, however, it is his sermons which have most distinguished his ministry, and it is with great pride that I offer now the sermon he gave during my most recent visit to his church. It went as follows. The text of my sermon today is taken from the following. And behold, Ron Saggers did tour England with the 1948 Australians, and lo, not a single test did he play in. Isn't there a lesson there for all of us? The selfless devotion to duty, the debasement of self-interest to the greater good of the team. Life is like a cricket tour, isn't it? Some of us reach the eminence of an Ernie Toshack. Some of us achieve the moderate success of a Doug Ring. But for most of us, life is a condition of the perpetual Ron Saggers, constant toilers in obscurity, loyal lieutenants to the top brass, humble participants in an endless match against minor counties on a bleak September afternoon in Jesmond. I never met Ron Saggers myself. If, however, my lord and maker, the creator of E.R. Dexter, heaven and earth, in that order, were to grant me such joy, I should grasp him by the hand, shake it firmly, and say, in the manner to which he and his compatriots are accustomed, good on you, sport. Give my regards to the Sheila, and let's crack a tube of the old swans. What do I mean by a tube of the old swans? I mean, don't I, that rounded metal object which contains a particularly powerful and nauseous beverage drunk in enormous quantities by our Antipodean cousins and used extensively throughout our great commonwealth of nations for the dispersal of mosquitoes and the scouring of lavatory pans. Life is like a tube of swans, isn't it? For most of us, it is a powerful brew which, if taken in excessive quantities, induces premature baldness and the growth of unwanted hair on the palms of our hands. But need we take life in excessive quantities? Is there no reason why we should not take it in moderation? Let us take a lesson from the cricket field. It is the fast bowler, isn't it, who takes all the glory and all the honour, but it is the slow bowler, weaving his subtle spells, who ultimately is still playing with distinction and enjoyment long after the fast bowler has hung up his boots. Is it not significant that it was a slow bowler, Mr. Eric Hollis, who accounted for the wicket of the great Sir Donald Bradman in the last test match he ever played in this country? And is there not an example there for all of us? If we want to get the most out of life, let us flex our spinning fingers constantly. Let us practice diligently in the nets of goodliness and always bowl to a good length on the pitch of holiness and never, never play with dirty flannels or dispute the umpire's decision. What do I mean by umpire's decision? I mean, don't I, those few seconds after the bowler has appealed against the batsman, and we await in a limbo of apprehension as to whether the white-coated gent with the sweaters strung round his waist will raise a forefinger denoting that the batsman is out, or turn on his heel, shaking his head and muttering, "Piss off, you balmy chuff." I am reminded here of that great and saintly Lancashire cricketer, Mr. Winston Place, who on retiring from the first-class game took up umpiring. He resigned from his position, however, because such was his goodness and his benevolence, he could not bear to give people out. God is rather like Winston Place, although I suspect he does not have ginger hair and is not so accomplished a late cutter. He doesn't like giving us out. And, of course, if we play a straight bat in the game of life, always move our body into the line of the ball and never flash outside the off stump, there's no reason why God should ever give us out until the time comes at the end of the day when the heavenly scorer nods in his drowsy hut and the celestial barmaid places the seraphic tea towels over the ethereal beer pumps and he declares our innings closed. Let us therefore resolve to put on the cricket togs of life with hope and with joy and with love. With radiance and gladsomeness in our hearts, let us buckle on our pads, shake the dandruff out of our caps, wipe the egg stains off our sweaters, and adjust our abdominal protectors. What do I mean by abdominal protectors? I mean, don't I, that device made in former times of metal and canvas, and now these days manufactured from reinforced plastic, which men strap over their most private parts to protect them from life shooters, Yorkers, and fast full tosses. Dear friends, let the love of God be your abdominal protector. Let his mercy and his unbounding wisdom be your thigh pad and your lightweight helmet. Let his compassion and his clemency for the basest of sinner be your gun and moor jockstrap. Dear friends, if you want the best out of life, always shop at God's. Thank you. Next week, my text will be, "And lo, Gordon Garlick did spite mighty sixes for Lancashire, and then of a sudden was he transferred to Northamptonshire." I find that oddly comforting, don't you?
Robin Bailey was reading Tales from a Long Room, written and abridged for radio by Peter Tinniswood. The producer was Tony Cliff.